So Erickson versus Renda was authored by Justice Guzman. It was a unanimous decision, 8-0 technically, because Justice Bland was not sitting. It was a legal malpractice case involving the statute of limitations defense, and more specifically, the Hughes tolling rule. So the malpractice case arose at least indirectly from a complex set of litigation, number of cases involving Mr. Renda's corporation and its creditors and the federal government, which had sued the corporation for breach of contract. And the petitioner here, Erickson, was the attorney who represented the corporate contractor in all that litigation. And after the government won its suit, while it was trying to enforce its judgment, it learned that Mr. Renda, who was president and sole shareholder of the corporation, had approved the transfer of the corporation's assets to pay off other creditors, which were also, by the way, controlled by Mr. Renda or the corporation. So the federal government sued Mr. Renda personally to hold him personally liable for transferring assets in violation of the federal statute. And again, the federal government won. So ultimately, Renda sued his attorney, Erickson, for having advised him that it was okay to transfer the corporation's assets to its creditors. But he filed this suit 11 years after the lawyer gave him that advice. It was 5 years after the government sued him for personal liability for the transfers. And it was 7 months, though, after all the appeals were exhausted in that suit. And so the question was whether tolling during the pendency of the underlying litigation prevented the statute of limitations from running. So we had held back in Hughes, which was back in 1991, that if a client wants to sue his attorney for malpractice committed, and this is key language, in the prosecution or defense of a claim that results in litigation, then limitations is tolled until the litigation is completed, whether by dismissal or settlement or final appeal. And the policy reasons for that is we don't want to force clients to adopt inherently inconsistent positions, suing their lawyer for malpractice, while at the same time the lawyer is defending them and denying any liability. And then also we, you know, recognize that the success of the malpractice claim would depend usually depend in large part on the results of that litigation. So we had said in a couple subsequent cases that that was just a very narrow, bright line tolling rule that we refused to expand, for example, in a case involving malpractice alleged against an accountant. Even though the same policy reasons might apply, we refused to extend it. And then we also had a case, Apex Towing, where the lawyer, the client had gotten new counsel before the litigation ended. So the policy reasons didn't seem to justify it, but we applied the bright line rule anyway. So the issue here was whether there were fact issues on whether this alleged malpractice occurred in the prosecution or defense of a claim that had resulted in litigation. And we held that there were not. The asset transfer may have related to the underlying pending litigation, but the transfer of the assets and the advice given to do that was not itself made in the prosecution or defense of that pending litigation. And so the holding here was that for the conduct to qualify for Hughes tolling, it has to be directly or integrally connected to carrying out the litigation. Here, the conduct was only incidentally or tangentially related. And so we reversed and rendered the dismissal based on the statute of limitations without the benefit of Hughes tolling.
So I pulled this case for a lot of reasons for you to know about. First off, like I said, we don't often have to deal with limitations, but if you do, this is one of those cases that you want to have for that. If you look at it, there's great language. It's one of those cases that sort of, you know, combines a lot of prior cases in a good place for the Supreme Court to talk about it. It also has a lot of really great quotable languages. For instance, here's a sentence: limitations can yield harsh consequences in some circumstances, but this is not one of those cases. So like if you have a limitations and you're on the other side of it, you're going to cite that case when you're arguing about it. But even outside of limitations, and Justice Boyd just kind of touched on it, there's other reasons that you should know about this case. And here what it is, and he was talking about it, is we're dealing with a clear and strict categorical or bright line rule. No matter how you want to reference it, that's the underlying legal issue here, is what do you do when you have this kind of bright line rule? So